Kevin, are you on the line?
Yes, Mary Beth.
Okay, great. We're going to go ahead and get started. Everyone, thanks for joining us. This is a media conference call to discuss the recently filed lawsuit by Drake's Bay Oyster Company and Kevin Lenny, who is joining us for this call. Just a quick note of instruction on how this is going to go. For those of you that have called in to listen, your lines are not active right now, but we will have a Q&A time after some introductory comments. So joining us on the call today is Kevin Lenny, one of the owners of Drake's Bay Oyster Company. We also have Dan Epstein, the Executive Director of Cause of Action, and Amber Abbasi, the Chief Counsel for Regulatory Affairs at Cause of Action. We're going to start with just brief opening comments from each of them, and then we will turn it over to Q&A time. So, Kevin, why don't you go ahead and begin?
Sure. Well, thank you. As of November 29th, 30th, when we received Secretary Salazar's decision, we have about 8 to 10 million oysters still in the bay being farmed at different stages of growth. And because we've only been given 90 days to wind down and get off the property, essentially not maybe all, but almost all of those oysters are going to have to be destroyed and the food is going to be lost. And the investment for that inventory will be lost. And that's all what happened with one day's notice. We heard on the 29th, and our agreement expired on the 30th. So if we stated before, we're not going to walk away. Instead, we have incredible community support, so we're fighting for our community, our employees, and our family against a federal bureaucracy here that seems to value lies, over the truth and special interests over the welfare of a whole community. The federal government's making a decision to shut down 40% of the state's oyster production, which also represents more than half, like 60% of the entire Bay Area's oyster production. The community support is amazing here. We can't, there's a incredible outpouring and all sorts of encouragement that we go through and right this wrong. The real impacts of this decision, when you think about it, is the claim that our opposition has made, the claim that the Park Service has made, is that they're trying to save the Estero, when in fact, actually, this federal government has attempted to plant oysters in Chesapeake, in San Francisco Bay, all over the nation because it's right for the ecosystem. It's actually better to have these oysters in the system as foundation species for their ecosystem services. And the other result is those oysters that are food in the Bay Area now will be imported, many from out of the country. Also, this farm is the only farm permitted of any farm within the seashore to provide nonstop educational tours of the historic working landscape and where we share with families, schools, and nonprofit groups about where their food comes from and how to do it right. It's actually hard to believe that this decision was made when our community support was so overwhelmingly in support of keeping this oyster farm going that somehow that wasn't heard in Washington. The Bay Area was ignored in this decision, apparently. And this is a public resource. This farm is a public resource, and it provides a public service as it has for almost 80 years. It's in the interest of the people of the state of California. We just happen to be our family is just the current stewards of this farm that it's existed for decades. Our hope is that we're just the current stewards, and there were others before us, and there would be others after us. We hoped we'd be here a little longer because the people of the Bay Area deserve this food resource, this education resource, and the 50,000 visitors a year and the families over generations that have enjoyed this place as a destination.
Great. Thanks, Kevin. And in response to this decision, Cause of Action, which is a nonprofit government accountability group, as well as Stoll Reeves and the SSL law firm out in California are all working together to represent Drake's Bay Oyster Company and the Lunnies in their fight. And so now we're going to hear from Dan Epstein, the executive director of Cause of Action.
Thank you. And I will be brief. Cause of Action decided to get involved in this because Cause of Action is concerned any time arbitrary government action harms American free enterprise. And that's what this issue is about. Cause of Action first became interested in this because what we saw was the Department of Interior through its National Park Service was using scientific data and what we viewed as flawed scientific data to ultimately justify a draft environmental impact statement that has now informed a decision to deny a supplemental use permit. And we think that this tells a story about how flawed agency decision-making and flawed science can have an impact upon everyday Americans. And it also tells a story about how flawed science can actually lead to real-world impacts in terms of expanding discretion of federal agencies and allowing them to engage in arbitrary and capricious action. And that's why Cause of Action has decided to fight this. It's as simple as that. This is how the federal government has used its authority to shut down small business. And it's something that if Cause of Action and others don't fight against this, it's going to be something that allows the federal government to expand its authority at the detriment to those hard workers in this economy who are trying to keep jobs and ultimately help consumers.
Great, thanks. And as you all know, there was a lawsuit filed yesterday in California in the Northern District, and so we're going to hear from Amber Abbasi now on the highlights of what exactly is contained in the lawsuit.
Good morning. We filed a lawsuit against Secretary of Interior Ken Salazar, Department of Interior, National Park Service, Jonathan Jarvis, the Director of the National Park Service, and also various NPS employees who took part in the decision-making process and the process by which Drake's Bay Oyster Company's application for this permit was made. Our allegations come down to five key points. First point is that the government was required to comply with the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, and also with the Administrative Procedures Act, which is the APA. This essentially is that there were procedures that they were required to follow in terms of providing opportunities for public comment, providing opportunities for Drake's Bay to ask questions about the process, to challenge the process, to be heard. And those statutory rights were ignored. They actually began to follow the NEPA process and then decided at some point midstream that they were no longer required to follow it. The Secretary has stated that he does not believe that he was required to follow NEPA or any other provision of law in terms of making this decision. Our second allegation is, as our director mentioned, that this violated something called the Data Quality Act. That is a law that says that the government has to use sound science and sound scientific methods, and anything that they publish needs to comply with those methods and those standards. We filed a Data Quality Act complaint on behalf of the Drake's Bay Oyster Company several months ago, challenging what was in the draft environmental impact statement and asking them to make changes to reflect sound science and accurate data. Unfortunately, they elected to not make those important changes. So what happened there is now we have our third allegation, which is that the due process clause of the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution was violated. This is that, as I said before, Drake's Bay did not have the opportunity to be heard. They did not have the opportunity to challenge these results. And as a result, they didn't get the procedures that they were entitled to, not just under statutes, but under the U.S. Constitution. And what this resulted in was an arbitrary and capricious decision by the Secretary to not extend the permit. This also had the effect of a taking against Drake's Bay Oyster Company. As Kevin mentioned, there are many immature oysters in the bay that are going to have to be destroyed if the business has to wind itself up in the next 90 days. By not giving them sufficient notice and by arriving at this arbitrary and capricious decision, they're essentially destroying that property. They're also depriving Drake's Bay of the benefit of state water bottom leases that they have, valid leases from the state of California that allow them to cultivate oysters in the bay. And those rights were reserved to the state. The state made a contract with Drake's Bay Oyster Company, and essentially what the government has done is made those worthless to Drake's Bay Oyster Company. And finally, as our complaint alleges that certain Park Service employees in the process of arriving at the decision have provided false or misleading information. This is, again, relating back to our concerns with the sound science and the data quality of the decision-making process. It became very clear over the course of this decision-making process that certain people in the National Park Service were not listening to valid critiques and not listening to scientists and people in the community who are calling attention to the errors that they have that they made in the course of their publications, and instead just pressed forward and made recommendations that were not in accordance with facts or the law. So that is a summary of the lawsuit that was filed yesterday. That was in the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California on behalf of the company and Kevin Lenny, its president.
Great. Thanks, Amber. So now we want to give you the opportunity to ask some questions. I'm going to give you a couple of instructions. If you want to jump into the queue for questions, you need to press star 6 on your phone, and you'll be added to the queue. I'm going to give a few seconds for folks to line up and do that, and then you will hear a prompt on your own phone line when you are free to speak, so just keep an ear out for those, and we'll try to get through as many of these as we can here in the next few minutes. So I will turn that on now, and we will wait a few seconds for things. So again, if you want to ask a question, you can press star 6 on your phone.
Hi, it's Ken with KGO-TV in San Francisco. One thing I noticed missing from this is any mention of the environmentalist who kind of acted as the voice of the National Park Service during this. Is there any effort to go after them for some of the allegations they had made?
No, our allegations only pertain to the government agencies and government employees that were involved in the decision-making process.
Did you have any follow-up question?
No, it's pretty straightforward. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, this is Jason Dearen from the Associated Press. Can you guys hear me?
Can you speak up just a little bit, Jason?
Can you hear me better now?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, good. I have two questions. The first is, can you talk a little bit more about the law in terms of how NEPA plays into this? I got the sense that the Interior Secretary was basically given the final decision on this, and that the NEPA analysis was only done after other earlier studies had been questioned, and so it was done as kind of a way to inform his decision, but that it wasn't necessarily legally required that he could have made a decision, taking into account NEPA or not. And if I don't know if that's true or not, but I was under that assumption. And then the other thing, I was wondering if you could, if cause of action, just looking up you guys on the internet, it looks like you're a relatively new organization. If you could tell me a little bit about, the organization and maybe a little bit more about why you got involved in this case. Oh, and also
sure,
if you're being paid or if it's pro bono.
Sure. We'll answer your question about the legal argument first, and then answer the question about our organization.
Thanks.
So our position in this suit is that the Secretary, contrary to his interpretation of the statute that is in his memorandum of decision, was required to comply with NEPA. And actually, the process began with the National Park Service stating that they would use the NEPA process. And initiated the NEPA process and began to go through the NEPA process, and only after first electing to use that process did they then decide that NEPA was no longer required.
This is Dan Epstein. Regarding your second question concerning cause of action launched in August of 2011. We are a 501c3 charity, so all of our legal work is done absolutely pro bono. We are committed to representing small businesses and individuals who are subject to government overreach and arbitrary abuse of authority. We became aware of this issue because it was our understanding that members of the U.S. House of Representatives, as well as members of the Senate, were very concerned about the ways in which the Department of Interior, in particular the National Park Service, was using scientific data or misusing scientific data in terms of reaching certain conclusions, including conclusions that would affect property owners like the Lunnies. And what we saw was that there was a connection between the misuse of science and ultimately the infringement of certain constitutional rights on the Drake's Bay Oyster Company. And ultimately, Cause of Action, which is an organization designed to educate the public about government overreach and to use litigation and communication tools to educate the public about that overreach, decided that this was a case in which it was important to get involved in because otherwise the government agencies like the Department of Interior would be able to continue engaging in shoddy science that ultimately had an impact upon American businesses.
All right, we'll move on to the next question.
Hi, Bob Gammon, co-editor of the East Bay Express. I had a question for about the legal issue. According to Secretary Salazar's memo, which he put out when he made the decision, he said that, quote, the environmental studies were not material to legal and policy factors that provide the central basis for my decision. So if that's the case, how can you challenge on the environmental issues in terms of past science done by the National Park Service if the Secretary is saying clearly that they weren't part of this decision?
Well, regardless of whether they were the basis of a decision or not, the government was still required to comply with statutory procedures and substantive requirements in developing those documents. So by putting this bad science in the final environmental impact statement and the draft environmental impact statement, failing to respond to valid complaints and correct flawed information as the Data Quality Act contemplates, those themselves were unlawful.
Even if they don't, at the end of the day, didn't impact his decision.
Well, whether it impacted his decision is a separate question. But we believe that it's clear that this process did have an impact on the decision. And we think that over the course of the lawsuit, we will be able to uncover the ways in which the process for the Secretary's decision and the process by which the Park Service publications were created was informed.
I had one quick follow-up. In terms of NEPA, do you have any other examples in which a commercial operation whose lease was about to expire on potential wilderness land, in which the government, National Park Service, was required to use NEPA and did not?
We don't have any specific examples. We'd be happy to provide some after this call. You know, it is worth noting that the Supreme Court came down with a decision today involving the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and a state Fish and Wildlife Department, which was claiming that there was takings of its property, and that issue dealt with temporary takings. I think it is rather clear that this is a situation where this is a permanent taking, and I think that independent of the specific facts, this is a clear area where the government has overstepped. I mean, we're not talking about a temporary deprivation of the Lunnies' rights and their lease rights. It's a permanent deprivation. It's fundamentally destroying a company. It's destroying an American business.
All right, thanks. We will move on to the next.
Hi, this is Mark Prado at the Marin Independent Journal newspaper. A couple of quick things. One, is there any injunction filed to allow the Oyster Company to keep operating in the interim here, or has that not been addressed?
We plan to seek injunctive relief later this week with the court.
Okay. And secondly, some people might argue that, hey, the lease was up, and what is the legal argument against that, that the lease was up last Friday? So what's the argument against that?
The statute that the secretary conferred discretion on the secretary was conditional and limited and contemplated that a new permit could be conferred. So it's not simply that the lease is over and no further permit could be conferred on Drake's Bay Oyster Company. The issue is, in the process of making the decision whether to confer a new permit, whether the law was followed. So once that process is engaged, once the application for a new permit is made, the government has to follow the law in terms of coming to the decision. And our contention is that they did not.
Just a quick follow-up. Wasn't the initial agreement from 1972, didn't that give an end date? I didn't see, at least in Secretary Salazar's letter, there was no mention of a chance to extend the permit.
There was a statute passed that explicitly conferred authority for this permit, clarifying that question.
Our Constitution contemplates, and ever since the first question of judicial review was addressed by the federal courts of this country, where there's a right, there's a remedy. Here, the Lunnies were given the right, and they're being deprived of that right without the opportunity to have the government be reviewed. Here, the government had clearly followed both the Constitution and congressionally established laws before it deprived the Lunnies and Drake's Bay Oyster Company of these lease rights. That's what we're challenging, that the government didn't obey the law, that this is a federal agency acting beyond the law, and we're looking to the court to make sure that this agency is being properly checked.
All right, Mark, thanks. I want to be able to get to the rest of these questions, so we're going to move on.
This is Josh Miller of FoxNews.com. I have two questions for Mr. Lunny. Can you first tell me how much those 8 to 10 million oysters are worth? And and part two, if according to Secretary Salazar in 2004 that there was going to be no lease permit renewal, can you tell me why that you're surprised by this announcement?
Okay, the answer to the first question, 8 to 10 million oysters, is the value is probably somewhere in the $4 to $5 million, at harvest time. There's no real value to them other than the expense that we put into them right now, because they're not valuable before harvest.
Right.
And I'm not aware of the Secretary Salazar's comment in 2004 specifically. We expected, based on the law and based on the environmental consequences of shutting the farm down, and given the fact that the Secretary had the discretion to make the right choice here, we had full confidence that the permit would, in fact, be renewed, and we were very much surprised by the decision by the Secretary.
Okay.
Does that answer your question, Josh?
Yes. If I could just follow up, in 2004, were you not explicitly informed that there would be no lease renewal?
What I was told in 2004, when we were doing our due diligence,
mm-hmm.
We learned that we did our due diligence, and we found that this 1972 document that we were contemplating purchasing the leasehold interest is in fact extendable by special use permit. There's an explicit renewal clause in it, so we found that ahead of time. And then later, we found that the NPS misrepresented the law and these contracts. They told the public that it's not renewable. We've already heard questions.
Kevin, I'm going to let Amber jump in here as well.
Sure. Thank you.
Yep. Just to clarify, I mentioned earlier that there was a statute that explicitly conferred this authority on the Secretary. This is part of the Appropriations Act of 2010. Explicitly gives the Secretary authority to issue to Drake's Bay Oyster Company a new special use permit for a period of 10 years from November 30, 2012. So this is a matter of statute. The potential for a new permit is a fact. A permit could have been granted, and it was not granted. And the process by which it was not granted was deficient in many, many respects. And that's why we're challenging this in court.
Okay, we're going to move on to the next question. Next question.
Hey, this is Emily Yaley from Greenwire. My question has mostly been answered, but I just wanted to clarify. What you're saying is that Section 124 of that Appropriations Act required the Park Service to go through the NEPA process, and what you're saying is that they didn't go through the NEPA process in the correct way, in the correct legal way. Is that what you're arguing?
That is a summary of one of our allegations. Our position is that Section 124 did not excuse them from going through the NEPA process as they would with any application of this kind that has environmental impact of this kind.
Are you saying that if Section 124 didn't exist, they would still have to go through the NEPA process?
Yes.
Okay.
Section 124 simply establishes that contrary to some assertions made by NPS that a new permit could in fact be authorized and the terms under which that authorization could be made by the Secretary.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, it's Ken at KGO again. Just a follow-up question. I wasn't quite clear on the idea of an injunction, and also, my bigger question is, what's this do to stop the closure clock?
So the injunctive relief that we would be requesting once that motion is filed, that will be publicly available. You'll be able to read all of the relief. But essentially what we'll be asking for is to kind of stop the clock while the court determines whether these processes and whether the substance of the data that was used in these decision-making processes was legal. If the 90-day timeline keeps ticking on, Drake's Bay Oyster Company is going to have to destroy those 8 to 10 million oysters. Their employees are going to lose their jobs, and we want the court to be able to weigh in without them suffering further harm. So that would be our purpose in seeking the injunction.
And that's you're expecting later this week?
We expect to file a motion for preliminary injunction later this week, yes.
Thank you.
Next question, go ahead.
No, I'm going to pass.
Okay. That finishes our Q&A queue right now. If you would like to ask any follow-up questions, again, feel free to press *6 on your line, and we will wait and see if there are any more questions. All right, looks like we have a couple.
Hi, Bob Gammon again from the East Bay Express. You mentioned earlier that one of your causes of actions has to do with a taking under the state water bottom leases. That's correct, right?
Yes.
My question is that I've read those leases, and they seem to be dependent upon the National Park Service permit. In other words, the leases are only valid because there is a permit. And if now that there's not a permit any longer, how are the leases from the state still valid? So that was my question.
That is, the validity of those leases is not the core issue in our suit. That's a separate kind of legal question. But just briefly, if the water bottom leases are valid based on the existence of a special use permit, and this permit should have been conferred if the agencies had followed their lawfully mandated procedures, that's the issue here in this case, that those state leases are being taken, and those benefits are no longer available because of the wrongdoing of the federal agency.
So it's kind of a side, you're saying it's kind of a sidelight to the main core issues of your lawsuit?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Hey, Mark, again at the Marin IJ. This is probably for Kevin. Just right now, what's going on at your place, at the farm? Are you still selling oysters, or has that had to stop, or are the employees still there? Can you just give us a picture of what's happening there right now?
Sure. Mark, we were given authorization. So there still is authorization by the National Park Service for us to continue to harvest and sell shellfish. So our staff's all still working as we were. So we'll be continuing until, you know, for the next 90 days as it stands.
Great. Thanks.
Lynn Axelrod, West Marin Citizen. As I have watched the debate unfold over a number of years, one of the issues has been the legislative history surrounding the creation of the park and the conveyance. And you're mentioning Section 124, which, as I understand it, was the rider that Senator Feinstein had passed in 2009, I think it was. Might have been 2010. And there is no... My question essentially is, how are you going to divine the intent of Congress in determining what that phrase means, notwithstanding any other provision of law, if there was no legislative history behind that?
That's the role of the court. That's why we would like a court to be able to rule on this issue.
Understood, but my question is, what will the court be looking at in terms of what was behind Congress's thought in passing that provision, since it did, as I understand and believe, it did not go through any debate? How do you present proof?
Proof as to the legislative history?
Pardon me?
I'm sorry, proof as to the legislative history of Section 1?
Right, in order for the court to have an understanding of what Congress intended. Where do you get the proof? It's just a question of your proof of that section. Whichever way the court decides, what do they base that on regarding legislative intent?
There's a variety of documents that courts use in terms of divining legislative history, including committee reports, statements, etc. So that evidence will be weighed by the court here there to determine the legislative intent with respect to any of these statutes.
Understood. But I don't believe there was any debate on that section. And so my question is, do you know of any congressional reports or transcripts that you can look to present to the... I'm not aware of any, and I would love to know if there are any.
At the current time, we aren't aware of any, but keep in mind that what Amber's team is going to be asking the court to do is to say, is this an area where the Secretary's decision has to be subject to NEPA? And that's why we bring this case before court. I think that our argument is going to be, and we would agree that most reasonable observers would agree, that the Secretary should have followed NEPA. I think the other thing is that keep in mind there's multiple causes of action here. One of the other causes of action is to say, look, the Lunnies filed a Data Quality Act petition. They gave this secretary the opportunity to correct the record on science. The secretary decided to ignore that and has not corrected the record. The court would have jurisdiction to order that this department needs to correct the record on science. The court also has the discretion to review whether there are takings claims and violations of due process claims. That's why we bring these actions into the court. And so ultimately, what we're going to argue and what we're going to present as evidence through whether what we find in committee records, committee reports, legislative history, and whatnot, as well as what has been other case law in NEPA, is to make the ultimate argument that this secretary violated the law by making this decision outside of the NEPA review process.
Okay, so just as a follow-up, so in other words, if the arguments about Section 124 and discretion and following NEPA fail, you have the other causes of action.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Hi, this is Peter Fimright with the San Francisco Chronicle. And I don't quite understand how if a permit you're saying that the permit could be renewed, how that makes it a requirement that they go through a big process. Because I don't know, I mean, it seems like other permits on national park land and elsewhere have simply been not renewed, and they didn't have to go through huge process. So maybe you could explain that a little better.
Our position is that they were required to go through that process here, and we're going to elucidate that for the court in our briefing.
All right.
Any questions, Peter? Okay.
This is Jason. If the injunction isn't successful and the 90 days are up and it turns out that, Kevin, you have to start taking your property off of federal parkland, what happens to the racks in the water? I know that a lot of those racks have been there for a long time and are rooted in the soil in the estero, and there would be some environmental issues with tearing them out. Can you just talk a little bit about kind of how that process would occur if it occurs?
Well, we haven't had that discussion yet, Jason, with the National Park Service, so it's kind of that's undetermined at this point. We haven't discussed it.
I see, and I was just wondering, do you know, or maybe your attorneys know, if it got to that point, whether an environmental review would have to be done on that process?
It's possible that it would. But again, that's a discussion that we have to have with the Park Service.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, we are reaching the 40-minute mark here on the call, but I do just want to make sure that there aren't any remaining questions. So again, if anyone has a question remaining, press *6. It looks like we do have a question. If you lined up for that, your line should be open. If anyone else has questions, go ahead and press *6.
Hi, Mark again at the Marin IJ. Just in terms of a timeline here, in terms of the main lawsuit here, how soon might we see that be heard, et cetera? Is there a sort of a time frame given the fact that you have this 90-day window? Sooner rather than later, is that just up to the court docket, or how will it proceed from here?
That is up to the court. Our request for injunctive relief, we would hope that would be heard expeditiously. So hopefully that would be resolved in the next few weeks.
Great. Thank you.
This is Lynn again from the West Marin Citizen. If I can dimly recall, I think when you file a case, you're assigned a judge in federal court. Have you been assigned a judge yet? And if you have, who is that?
We have not yet been assigned.
And when would you expect that to happen?
As soon as we hear from the court, we will make that information available.
Okay, thank you.
All right, and that is the last question I'm seeing on the line. So going once, going twice, final chance to get a question. All right, just as a conclusion.
Actually, I do have one more to follow up. Can you give us the case number?
The case number has not yet been assigned, but we'll provide a copy of the complaint to you at the conclusion of this call.
Okay, thank you.
We do have one more question.
Hi, Bob Gammon from East Bay Express. Just one quick follow-up for Mr. Lenny. In Secretary Salazar's order last week, he also directed the National Park Service to look into extending leases for cattle ranches from 10 to 20 years. You have a cattle ranch there right across the street from the oyster farm. Do you plan to pursue that and go for the 20-year lease extension?
That the cattle ranch is actually my mom and dad's ranch, and we have not had that. We haven't had that discussion yet.
Okay.
All right, great. I think we're gonna wrap up there. But if any of you have any follow up questions or would like to get in touch with the Lennies or anyone from Cause of Action, feel free to call our office directly at 202-499-4232. You can reach me via email. My email address is mary.beth.hutchins@causeofaction.org. Thanks again to everyone for joining, and have a great day.